with one of the most successful vaccination programs in the world and set to launch the most ambitious national investment strategy in its post-Franco history, Spain's left-wing coalition is, despite these achievements, not as popular as we might expect. The coalition parties are struggling in the polls as the far-right Vox party surges. So today we ask, what's going on in Spanish politics?
Spain's socialist party and the far-left Unidas Podemos have agreed a deal to form a coalition government.
The opposition accused Pedro Sánchez of trying to form a Frankenstein coalition, of essentially selling Spain out to the parties that want to break up the unity of Spain.
Welcome to the Another Europe podcast with me, Luke Cooper, and my co-host Zoe Williams. Our guest today is Marga Ferrer, one of the co-presidents of Transform Europe, the education think tank connected to the European Left Party, and a member of United Left, the party that stands in elections with Podemos as part of a common platform. And together they are a junior partner in the coalition government led by Prime Minister Pedro Sánchez's socialists. We'll be asking Marga to give us the lowdown on what's happening with politics in Spain and how worried we should be about the rise of Vox. You can feed back to us on the show and feed in ideas on what you'd like us to cover in the future by emailing podcast@anothereurope.org.
Hi, this is Elena. Back in the 2016 referendum, I was just your regular politically active migrant. So I was so happy when I found Another Europe is possible. I grew up in Bulgaria and my opportunities to move to the UK 8 years ago to study and to change my life and to change my politics even basically came through membership of the European Union. So it's sad that we're now living through the Brexit that we warned about back then. But that's why we need to keep going, because none of the issues and none of the problems have gone away. So that's why I think you should join us today. Go to anothereurope.org and you can get access to an extended version of this podcast by making Another Europe is Possible your home too.
So we're based in the UK, but we have listeners from all over the world. We're going to take a deep dive into politics in Spain today, but we want to make this accessible. So can we start by you giving us a beginner's guide? There were two general elections in 2019, and the outcome ultimately was a coalition government. Who's in it and what are its priorities?
Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be with you. Yeah, Spain now is in the government of Spain. There is a coalition with the radical left and the socialist party. And this was the first time that Spain has a progressive government with the radical left inside since the Second Republic, I mean, 80 years ago. So it's really important in symbolical terms in a country who has suffered 40 years of dictatorship like Spain. How would this happen? I think we can talk a little about it. Spain, like the south of Europe, suffered particularly from the financial and economic crisis in 2008. And that started a huge mobilization process that went on the streets almost every weekend for 5 years until 2015 or 2016. That was the basis of the creation of Podemos, which was at the beginning like a party who represented the Indignados movement or the people who were really disappointed with the political in the country. That was the beginning of that. After that, there was a coalition between Podemos and United Left, which is the traditional left in Spain, creating this coalition, Unidas Podemos. So we went to the elections, general elections, in 2019. And let me stress this point because I think it's particularly important. When we went to the elections in 2019, at the result of the elections, the only possible government in Spain was a coalition of the left, meaning the Socialist Party and Unidas Podemos. But the Socialist Party at that time refused to have a coalition government and blackmailed Unidas Podemos with the idea of you don't accept only a government of the socialists with the support outside of Unidas Podemos, meaning the radical left, we are going to repeat the elections and the right wing can win the elections again. I think one of the main contributions of Pablo Iglesias, the leader of Podemos at that time, was not accepting this kind of blackmail and telling that Unidas Podemos will be on the government or nothing. I mean, not taking this blackmail at all. And actually, we repeat the general elections because Pablo Iglesias refused this idea of supporting the socialist government from outside. In the repetition of these elections, the results were the same. So the Socialist Party has nothing but to accept the idea of having this coalition government with Unidas Podemos inside. So now Unidas Podemos has 5 ministries and 12 ministers of the Socialist Party. And that is more or less how the things happened in Spain.
And then almost as soon as the coalition government was formed, the COVID-19 pandemic hit in 2020. So how did that affect the government's programme?
Absolutely, absolutely. Imagine that the government took office on February 2020 and the pandemic started in March. So everything was absolutely affected by the pandemic. Mostly, one thing that I think is interesting for the audience to know, in the negotiations with the Socialist Party, Unidas Podemos accepted some minor ministries. Logically, when you are the smaller part of a coalition, you have to accept, you know, not having the Minister for Economics or, you know, the Foreign Affairs Ministers. But I think the Socialist Party made a mistake at the time of the negotiations and accepted that Unidas Podemos has the Ministry of Labour. And that was really important because when the pandemic started, the Ministry of Labour were the ministry to support not only the workers, but the companies with a lot of public money, like in all countries in Europe, né? In order to avoid, you know, massive kickoff of workers or protecting workers. So she, which is a woman, became one of the most important politicians of the country during the pandemic. And she is one of the ministers of Unidas Podemos.
Would you say the government has had a good pandemic? I mean, obviously, it's been absolutely awful for everyone all over the world. And of course, it's still going on here in, you know, as we're heading into January 2022, and it's still rumbling on. Like the vaccination program in Spain has been really quite impressive, it looks like, from afar. I mean, it has now one of the highest vaccination rates in the world, higher than the UK, even though our government is often saying how wonderful our vaccination program is.
You started first, by the way, and you started at the very beginning, yeah.
So you did a kind of the tortoise and the hare. So we like ran off too quickly, and then Spain and Portugal and a lot of other countries caught up. But seriously, the vaccination program has been really impressive. So that must be a feather in the cap of the government.
Yeah, but I think we really don't know exactly why in Portugal, in Spain, and even in Italy, population accepted so well the idea of being vaccinated. I mean, in Spain, also in Portugal, we don't have anti-vaccination movement, or it's quite minoritarian. I mean, it's not really relevant at all. And thinking in why that's happened, it came to our mind two things. First is that Spain and also Portugal were very hardly attacked by the virus at the beginning of the pandemic. So I think the cold country remembered the hard days when we see 1,000 deaths per day at the beginning of the pandemic during the lockdown. So I think this memory of the hardest day to keep and remain in the country. So in all this time, we never, I mean, every people wear mask, face mask, keep the distance, wash hands, you know, all the measure always has been keeping the country. But there was no moment when the people decided that we are out of risk, not at all. This is one of the reasons. But the other reason, I think, and this is a particularly thinking, is that Spain considered itself in second-rate country in Europe. Let me put it like this, no? There is some kind of idea of respecting authorities, not having this question of we are like, you know, the best in Europe at all. I don't know how to say it. It's like this inferiority complex sometimes is good in terms that the people follow the authorities' recommendations, particularly for the health and for the doctors. No? It's a country who respects the doctor. So it's amazing, but there is no anti-vaccination movement in Spain, not even Vox, which is the far-right political party. is complaining about some measures, but not anti-vaccination at all. And also not being vaccinated is socially not acceptable for the population. So there's a lot of pressure to be vaccinated. And I think it's a good result. We're quite proud of it.
That's quite interesting, isn't it? Because we associate anti-vaccination movements with other far-right authoritarian movements. Anti-maskers and anti-vaxxers dovetail a lot with other kind of social media-driven fascistic language. So if you have no anti-vaccination movement, does that mean you consider Spanish discourse to be kind of inoculated against all those dialogues?
I think we must connect the idea of the anti-vaccination movement in Europe with the rise of the far right. I mean, the questioning of the system or the elites of the authorities coming from the extreme right positions. And that not happened in Spain, actually. I mean, the far right is not like the UK in the UK, I mean, or in other parts of Europe. The far right party box is like a split of the Conservative Party. So it's quite traditionalist. It's not, you know, like challenging the system all the time, like in other parts of Europe. I think so. So I think we must connect why the people support the far right with the same idea why the people don't support this plot ideas against the vaccine or the COVID. In that sense, let me recommend you a study made by the University of Sigmund Freud in Austria, who made some research with the demonstrations against the vaccination movement in the country, in Vienna. And the results are quite interesting, no? In terms that it's a particular part of this society who has been really affected also in economic terms, no? So is this not believing in the authorities and not believing almost in anything and having this rage is also connected with the social conditions of the people? I honestly think so.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll come back in a moment to talk about Vox, but if we could stay on for a second, the pandemic, like you've made quite extensive use of vaccine certificates. I think there's quite a bit of regional variation that perhaps you could explain for us. Basically, I think it's because public health is quite devolved in the Spanish governmental structure, right? But nonetheless, most of the regions seem to have introduced some form of vaccine certification. Do you think that that was successful in incentivizing take up of the vaccine? And also, it's quite controversial. I don't know if it's controversial in Spain, but it seems to be quite controversial on the UK left. There's quite a lot of concern that vaccine passports might be discriminatory, that it might slip into authoritarianism. And I just wondered what you thought about it based on your experience.
I think, I mean, the COVID certificate is only demanded, I think, in Catalonia and in some regions in Spain. Has not affected really the development of the pandemic or the level, but it's a measure to encourage people to be vaccinated in order to go to restaurants or concerts. Because in Spain, the COVID certificate is only for going to restaurant and, you know, public spaces like this. It's not like in Italy that they demanded to go to work, which is more complicated. So at least in Spain, that debate is not happening. But it's also related with the idea that everybody here accept the question that we need to be vaccinated first. And secondly, because it's a tourist country. So tourists coming from outside the country have this certificate. I mean, has to have to come to the country, the same in the UK. So it's not really a big question at the moment. But I know in other parts of Europe where this certificate is demanded to go to work or to go to other parts is more complicated. But now that the question of the obligatory vaccination, compulsory vaccination in Germany and in Austria, I think that the debate is going to change. It's not only the certificate, it's the necessity of being vaccinated to go to work or like in Austria. I mean, the people is confined who has not a vaccine. So it's quite complicated because this is true that this question of freedoms on question of protecting health is on the table. But clearly, I think in the south of Europe, particularly in Portugal and in Spain, the protection of health is the main issue. I mean, so there is not so hard debate on the question of private freedoms.
So like all Eurozone countries and to some extent EU countries in general, what happens at the EU level has a big impact on Spanish politics. And for once, there's been some good news. The Next Generation EU was a big victory for the Spanish government and the left. Spain's receiving 69.5 billion, with 40% going to green transition, 30% to digital infrastructure. It's been described as the biggest investment program the country has seen in the democratic era. So people must be pleased to see EU membership delivering investment as opposed to austerity.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Of course. I think it was not like a success of the Spanish government, but in a sense, it was a success of the common sense on the left fighting against austerity policies during all this year in mostly all of the countries of the European Union. So European Union made the right thing, so the right decision, putting all this money for the recovery funds and the next generation. I think that the problem we are facing is how to use this money in a cooperative way. And the Spanish population is quite pro-European population, but this amount of money is clearly something that helps a lot, not only in Spain, but also I think in all Europe, but particularly in the South. The problem now, so, is how to use this money properly. And the debate now is how can we coordinate policies all around the European Union in order to have, like a common strategy for digitalization or reindustrialization of some countries like mine, who in the division of work in Europe is a country with no industry and based in tourism and services only. So it's not only the good idea of receiving money, the good idea is to open the debate for some kind of reindustrializations in some countries in Europe. So clearly it's a good news, and people received it quite positively, of course.
Brexit has happened, and many of the things we warned about are coming true, but no one seems to want to talk about it. Here at Another Europe, we say it's time for meaningful accountability and real scrutiny, and that's where our new project, Brexit Spotlight, comes in. We're breaking the silence and shining a light on the calamities. Find out more at brexitspotlight.org. You might correct me here, or you might push back against this question, but despite what sounds from afar like progress, great vaccination program, got this really big investment program from the EU that Spain, yes, and other countries and the European left in general really campaigned for over the last decade. So that's great. But the coalition parties are struggling in the polls, and the far-right Vox have really surged. They now look pretty comfortably in third place behind the centre-right and centre-left. Why is that, do you think? What's behind the real surge of support for the far right?
In the case of Spain, and I think it's the same in other countries, as I told you, the far right is like a split of the conservatives. Actually, the two blocks, if we can put it like this, the progressive blocks and the conservative block with the far right is almost the same. The country is quite polarized. No, it's not 50%, no, but I mean, mostly they don't change it, if you see it like this in the last years. The question is that, Spain is almost a federal country. That means that the importance of the regional parties in the national parliament is so that it makes it possible for the far right to be part of the government. Let me put it like this. The Catalonian nationalists and the Basque nationalists will never support the far-right government. And that is a plus, because even it is true that the Socialist Party and Unidas Podemos, the two members of the government, are in more or less the same position in the polls, like when they were elected. It is true that they need the support of the nationalists in the national parliament. And those nationalists will never support a far-right government. So that is the idea of even the Vox is glowing or not in the polls, which is more, they have the 15% of support. At the end of the day, it not make easy the idea of being part of the national government. The nationalist independentists in Spain are important. I mean, and they have quite support in Catalonia and the Basque country, and they both are needed for the national government, and they will never support the far right. So we expect the far right not being in the national government for years, we hope.
And isn't there another way of putting that, though? I mean, we've just heard from you the optimistic take, if you like, on the role of the nationalist parties play in the Spanish national political scene. But don't Vox themselves draw an awful lot of their support from hostility, in particular to Catalan separatism, over the last 10 years or so? So could you explain that for us?
Yeah, of course. I mean, Spain, like, as I think is quite particular, have a very strong independentist movement in Catalonia who demands to be a different country. It was stronger in the past, like it does today. For more than 100 years, always there have been a nationalist party in Catalonia, led by the national bourgeoisie in Catalonia. I use it words because they use it. I mean, they call themselves the national bourgeoisie in Catalonia as the leading party. This party, the same with the right nationalists in the Basque country, were the supporters of the different national governments, because as I told you, the national governments sometimes need the support of these nationalists to be in the government. In the past, they even supported the right-wing party, the Popular Party, to be in the government. But not today. Not today, because precisely in 2015 and 2016, this huge, massive independentist movement happened in Catalonia, and that created the reaction of the nationalism in Spain in the form of Vox, which is the radical far-right political party that makes the idea of the unity of the country as the main slogan for them. A country who comes for 40 years of dictatorship under Franco, who put the idea of the unity of the country with one country, one religion, one language as the main fascist idea of the strategy for the country at the time. So there is a connection between Vox and Franco dictatorship in the past. So that this kind of polarization, it is true what you said, Luke, is based on the idea of the unity of the country against the nationalists and against the independentists in Catalonia and in the Basque country. And as you can imagine, these have audiences in the whole country.
And there's also the ongoing refugee and migration crisis on the Atlantic route. Is this something that's giving Vox a lot of energy? And how has the government responded? Are they letting Vox dominate that narrative?
The government, I mean, the national government has two parts, the most progressive, which is Unidas Podemos, and the part of the Socialist Party. Unfortunately, the Minister of Interior is from the Socialist Party, and he's quite conservative in terms of the refugees or the borders. Of course, Vox, the far-right party, make the idea of the foreigners, particularly the refugees or the people coming to Spain through the boats in the Mediterranean Sea or in the Atlantic Ocean or to the Canary Islands, as one of the main issues. But let me say that this is not the main discourse of Vox. The main discourse of Vox is anti-feminist and anti-nationalist in Catalonia and in the Basque Country. So the problem is that the Spanish government used to use the excuse of European policies to act against refugees and to protect the borders in a very not humanistic way, if I can put it like this, with putting people who arrive to Ceuta, Melilla, who are cities who are in Africa, or the Canary Islands, come back to their countries immediately with no rights, I mean, no asylum rights or not protecting their rights. No? But they always put the excuse of the European Union rules. No? But let me insist on the idea that for Vox, Vox is more a traditionalist extreme right party rather than a racist one. They are racist, of course, but it's not the main issue like in other parts of Europe. Yeah.
That's really interesting to hear that distinction. I'm just wondering whether you agree with this or whether you agree with what I'm about to say, which is basically the whole of European politics, including, I think, arguably the Spanish government. I don't know if that's controversial, seems to be moving backwards on the refugee and migration. The reason I say arguably the Spanish government is because I think it was in 2018 where Pedro Sanchez was really made quite a brave decision to take the refugee boat, the Aquarius, which at the time the far-right government in Italy was refusing to land. And really, really quite a brave humanitarian decision to say, this is a humanitarian question for the Spanish government and we will take the boat. And it now seems in European politics, looking at the situation on the Polish-Belarus border, that there is really a dangerous consensus emerging around Fortress Europe. And you'll forgive me for thinking there's a danger that Sanchez and the Spanish government are part of this consensus.
Yeah, that's a problem, yes. Clearly, it is true that the pandemic stopped everything, no? Including the migrations. We don't receive so many migrants like in the past, but we will in the future because it's unstoppable. I mean, clearly unstoppable. And you are absolutely right. That is one of the problems, that from a very progressive position, quite pro-refugees, or at least to open the debate, how can we proceed with this question? Now the Spanish government are supporting the European Union with this irrationalistic, I mean, it's not rational, position against open any border to refugees, and also not understanding the reason why the people taking so many risks to arrive in Europe. You know? What we are watching in Poland is really unacceptable. It's really terrible. And you are absolutely right. Sometimes some European governments, and Spain is not an exception, use European Union as an excuse for not acting or not pushing progressive policies. And this is really one of the problems we had with the European Union, the lack of democracy, of transparency in the decision-making processes that make the sensation that we cannot stop any European Union rule. But it's not true. It's not true at all. It's an excuse made by the government, and Spain is in this position now with known pro-refugees policies, which is something we need to change. Yeah.
I mean, if we could loop back quickly to the point you made about Franco and that historical tradition on the right, it sounds really shocking to an outsider when Vox supporters praise Franco in the public discourse.
Yo creo que fue un
the Franco years weren't so bad. There was a good side.
Okay, it was a dictatorship, but a harmless one.
I'm proud of Spain's history. Thanks to Franco, Spain made progress and became what it is today.
I mean, you know, no less shocking than an Italian party praising Mussolini. But does it feel that way from the inside, or has it got such a long lineage that you don't take it that seriously?
You know, Spain didn't participate in the Second World War, so we were not part of the winners. And I think that's one of the ideas that some part of the far right understand, that Franco was not exactly that Mussolini and Hitler, and he was, clearly. Né? So it's amazing, it's completely unbelievable that something that in other countries like Italy or Germany will be absolutely forbidden, like, you know, to talk about Franco dictatorship in a positive way, né? It's unacceptable, but they do sometimes. I mean, they do, particularly in the idea of order against insecurity, and also with the obsession, anti-communist obsession. They call communists everybody, you know, that doesn't think like them. No? And it's really, really outrage. And it's one of the most terrible things we have in the country, is that we didn't deal with our past in such a positive way to understand that it's not acceptable, the reivindication of Franco dictatorship. It was really very terrible. I mean, the best historians analyzing Spanish histories are British, by the way. And they said in their study that after the civil war in Spain that happened in the 30s, more than 100,000 people were killed and still are buried and not honored. You know? So this is a strategic cultural battle still in Spain. Yeah? The memory, the democratic memory, and the recovery of the democratic memory is one of the most important things in the cultural battlefield against the far right. They know it and they use it.
We should talk a bit more about this, actually, as we've got a little bit more time, because as I understand it, this is an issue where the Spanish government is being quite brave in the national debate. I think it's opening a museum about the crimes of Franco. It's also in your home city, you're calling in from Madrid. It's a hugely controversial political question there, right? I know when I visited Madrid quite a few years ago now, it's not very difficult to stumble across statues of Franco-era generals all over the place. It's really quite visible in the city. But I think there's also a recent move to commemorate by the municipal authorities, like Franco-era soldiers and things. So could you tell us a bit more about that?
Yes, the democracy in Spain arrived on the idea of the national consensus of all the parts, from the Communist Party to the army, on the idea of a peaceful transition to democracy. And that has a dark side. And the dark side was like a forgotten memory of what happened in the country those 40 years. Years after, the idea of demanding the democratic memory of those people and what happened in, under Franco dictatorship arises again as a national debate. You know that we have a battle for the names of the streets, because during the Franco dictatorship, they changed the name of all the streets in the country and put, you know, Franco, the generals of the army, or people, fascist names. Né? So when the democracy came, we changed a lot of names, but not all of them. And even today in Madrid, in my city, we are fighting for the names of the streets. I mean, to take out, né, those Franco names and put a progressive or normal or an ordinary ones. Né? It's a huge battle. It is. Actually, one of the best things that Pedro Sanchez, the president of the country, did at the beginning was to take Franco out of his grave, who was honor place close to Madrid. Unbelievable. I mean, it's like having Mussolini Museum in Italy. It's not, I mean, it's completely out of history. So he did so. He took Franco out of the grave, who was in a, you know, like a monastery, for honor him. And that was the beginning of huge cultural debate with the far right that demanded the memory of Franco. No? So yeah, it's really a very important political battle. I honestly think so, to make a conversation with our past in just terms for the victims of the fascism. It's something we still need to do here in my country.
That concludes this episode for those listening on the podcast platforms, but the discussion isn't over. An extended version of this podcast is available to members of Another Europe Is Possible. In this week's extra time, we ask Marga if there was one reform she would choose to introduce at the European level, what would it be? And we also talk about the comparison between the situation in Spain and the rest of Europe, as the balance of forces on the continent as a whole seems to tilt slightly in favour of the centre-left and radical left. It's a good chat. If you want to listen to it, just sign up to our people-powered movement. Another Europe is the home of the European left. You can join us at anothereurope.org/join. It doesn't cost much at all and makes a big difference.